Hello, and welcome to A Changing Landscape, the GSC Growth podcast. This series of podcasts will address some of the most pressing challenges and exciting opportunities facing landowners and farmers today, from the loss of BPS and the overhaul of agricultural policy to growing your business, diversification, and planning for the future. For this month's podcast, we've decided to produce a special edition responding to the Agricultural Transition Plan, which was published by DEFRA at the start of the month. The plan sets out DEFRA's strategy for the early transition period from 2021 to 2024 and contains some new details on the rate of BPS reductions and future schemes such as the Sustainable Farming Incentive and the Farming Investment Fund. GSC Grays ran a series of webinars this autumn tackling some of the key issues behind the headlines, and we have selected some of the highlights from those webinars to feature in this episode. We'll be starting off by looking at the BPS reductions that we know will apply from 2021. To explain the changes, I will leave you in the capable hands of Greg Ricketts, Rural Director at GSC Grays, who provides a commentary on the forthcoming changes to agricultural support.
Clearly, the Agricultural Act represents significant change for the industry, and in regard to policy for the future, I think everybody would be well aware that current schemes are on the way out, and we are going to have a raft, quite a number of new schemes for the future, some of which will focus on farm profitability, some of which focus on investment, and some which focus on the environment. At first glance, the new schemes look complex, and that is probably a fair comment. But on the other hand, we see opportunity in these schemes for farmers to invest in their businesses and take things forward in a positive way. The Agriculture Act clearly signifies change of policy, and the key vision from DEFRA, I think, is twofold: a sustainable and profitable farming sector, and then environmental recovery. Not necessarily in that order. It probably is environment first and then farm profit second. In terms of the overall support to agriculture in England, the support levels run at something like £2.4 billion per annum. And the profit level, the TIF, total income from farming, which is a DEFRA measure, has run at something like £4 billion in 2019. So the support is a significant figure, and clearly I think any reduction in that support is of concern, but we've got to look at options to adapt to that and take things forward positively for the future. In terms of initial cuts, they are very, very significant, and perhaps much quicker than we'd originally anticipated. Initially, I think many had expected that on the basis that the ELMS payments won't be introduced in significant numbers until perhaps 2024, that any cuts in the basic payment might be more gradual to begin with. Actually, DEFRA have taken that, taken a much harsher approach perhaps, and the decline in support is more significant in the first 3 to 4 years of the scheme, with at least a 50% reduction by 2024 and slightly more than that for the larger receipts of basic payment. So what does a future farming business look like? Well, I can only really see three or four key options. Firstly, that's focusing on production, profitable without support. Initially, one might think of pig, poultry, dairy businesses as falling into that category. They generally produce a profit without support. However, there's some quite interesting examples of farmers extensifying, particularly in the livestock sector, the grazing livestock sector, where they are outwintering stock and avoiding the need for housing, and looking to reduce the cost of production, most likely combined with a stewardship type agreement. But there's very interesting examples of profitable farming businesses in that respect. Secondly, we might see businesses that are contracted to provide environmental and public goods, very much looking at that as an enterprise on farm, a profit centre, and really going for it on the environmental front to pick up as much income as possible. And finally, we see diversified farming businesses where perhaps the main element of income will come from non-farming sources, utilising the resources on farm to do other things, utilising labour and machinery to do other things perhaps. Not necessarily easy in the current climate, but lots of our clients and lots of farmers have already diversified, and we see more of that for the future. And finally, obviously there is a mix of opportunities here. It could be a combination of any of those, and there is possibly some farmers who might consider exiting the industry in a positive manner, taking an exit payment and actually looking to draw back and allow others to take on their farming business.
The transition plan also outlines some of the schemes that will be available to farmers through the transition period and beyond. They include support for new entrants, a lump sum exit scheme, the Farming Investment Fund, a slurry investment scheme, tree health scheme, a scheme for farmers in protected landscapes, the animal health and welfare pathway, a farming resilience scheme, and of course, the environmental land management scheme. We don't have time to run through all of these today, but do keep an eye out for announcements and consultations on many of these proposed schemes over the next 12 months. Robert Sullivan, Director at GSC Grays and Head of our Farm Business Services Department, had the following comments about the new suite of schemes.
There is an awful lot of schemes starting at various points over the next 4 years. The total spending on this scheme is around about £210 million, but there's not actually any indication at this moment in time about how much money is available for each scheme, nor the individual payment rates within that. DEFRA are going to make further announcements early in the from the new year now. Other than farmers in the protected landscape scheme, there is no indication for any support to help farmers diversify their farming income streams or their income streams away from farming. That is likely to be funded under what they call the Shared Prosperity Fund, which is going to replace the growth programme and the leader schemes, and it's going to be still in the similar form where job creation is the main one of the key factors. These schemes are there to help businesses improve their productivity and profitability in the farming sectors, and it's something that you should really start keeping an eye out as to how they're going to develop over the next few years.
With such major changes on the horizon, the outlook for farmers and landowners can be daunting. But our Rural Director, James Seven, has a straightforward 8-point plan for anyone considering how best to prepare for the transition period. I'll hand over to James now to talk you through the plan in full.
Farming is changing, and my brief, it would be my pleasure to share with you now in the next few minutes how we as a team are looking to help farming businesses respond and make all these changes an opportunity for the future. First of all, though, I think three things are vital as we approach this. Firstly, being very, very positive about change, trying to engage a really positive attitude to what's in front of us, not to be afraid of it, but to actually try and embrace the opportunities, which is my second point, that we've already started to hear about turning those challenges into opportunities. And my third thing to start with is to try and encourage everybody and us as advisors to focus on things that we can and you can actually control. If I'm honest, as an industry, as a sector, sometimes we can get quite excited and up and concerned about things we have no opportunity to control at all. The obvious one is the weather, markets, prices to a degree, trade agreements, the negotiations that are going on at the moment. We can't influence those directly ourselves. Obviously, they could influence our marketplaces significantly. So some of these macro factors we can't focus on. But I'm pleased to say that there are a great many things as farmers, as farm business managers and advisors and consultants, we can have direct control over. And as a team, we have a can control 8-point plan, which we try to influence and bring to bear on businesses that we help review the future going forward. So let's just share with you some of the key things that I think you can control and that we can help you look at in more detail. How well we know your business, how, you know, to farm or not to farm is the second question, which we'll look at in a moment. What you do, who you sell to, cost structures, a key thing, how much is borrowed, and most importantly, in conclusion, we'll look at planning for the future, creating robust and sustainable plans going forward. So first of all then, stage one, first of the 8-point plan, know your business. This is a golden opportunity to stand back and review, possibly for the first time, maybe not if we've helped in a review of your funding affairs recently, but it's a very good opportunity to take a second look and stand back. Now, starting, I would suggest, with your objectives, what your objectives, the family objectives are in the short, medium, and longer term. Crucial to appreciate how you view your future and what you want to achieve going forward if you're going to respond effectively and get the very best out of the transition arrangements that we're just talking about. Secondly, under review, how is the current business model actually performing? How much do you know about its the individual performance, the contributing factors to your overall business performance? Cost of production. What is your margin from actual farming production? And in conversely, how reliant is your business on the support payments that are available currently and that are changing? What could you change, and how can you and perhaps can we help you adapt to embrace the change and make the very most of it going forward? Secondly, let's just be clear, this is a watershed moment, I think, for our industry. Greg's already suggested and made clear that this is possibly one of the biggest changes we've seen for decades. And for some, this might be a time that it's right to consider moving in a different direction, retiring, just exiting the industry. And if that is the case, if that is right for you, it must be seen as a very positive response in its own right. A number of factors come into play here: stage of career, whether there's succession, whether there is interest in the next generation to continue farming. And if not, and it is the right time to make a change, there's absolutely nothing to be concerned about there. It's again, just like taking the business forward, it's about reviewing the options carefully and selecting the right one for you. It might be that you want to stay at home and contract out the opportunity for farming, and that gives an opportunity for others, whether it's the next generation or other neighbors or even new entrants potentially. Thirdly, what is your farm best suited to do? Greg's mentioned what a future farming business might actually look like. And this is about appraising all the different resources that you have on the farm, the farming systems, the enterprises you currently manage. What is your farm best suited to do in terms of the farming operation? And when I talk about use of resources, I mean all those resources, not just the obvious ones on a farm, which would be land, buildings, livestock, machinery, but also the people, and particularly the skills those people have, your family has, because diversified opportunities very often thrive because one of the family members has a passion for doing something different. And that's just as important as a resource as some of the more traditional things we might think of as farming resources. Could you find new income streams that might complement your farming system at the moment? A stewardship agreement now managed as an enterprise could present a real opportunity as a stepping stone to the new environmental management opportunities coming down the line in a few years' time. Marketing. If we're producing farming goods, whether they be commodities or added value, key will be marketing. And most importantly, we believe, putting the customer first. Produce what people want to buy and produce it cost effectively, and that will help you produce a farming profit without such a dependence on the support income. I believe also active involvement in marketing by farmers and advisors will be key to success in this area going forward. Fifth on the list, how do you actually farm? People, machinery, farming systems, land selection. That's something, again, which now perhaps we're taking a very close second look at. Making sure you're farming the best land and keeping that for farming production, and possibly looking to other uses for land that is less suited to prime farm production. At home, you know, can we find those new uses for those other areas, such as stewardship, perhaps other enterprises? And when we're looking at new farming opportunities, I would urge everyone to really ask the question, will I be better off as a business for taking this opportunity, or possibly just busier? So very important to do your sums carefully so that what you're doing actually allows you to move forward successfully. Under the same heading of how we farm, I'd like to just touch on collaboration or joint ventures, working together, which anybody in the audience, and I know some of you do know me, will know that I'm pretty passionate about this. I think it has a real role to play in how we respond to these changes. Sharing resources, whether they be people, land, machines, can be really, really powerful in driving costs down, actually, you know, sharing skills, easing the burden and the pressures on a farming business, and actually having more fun, actually joining together to work with others can be great fun. Number six is cost structures. Successful businesses, whether they be farming or otherwise, manage cost of production and overhead costs particularly ruthlessly. Reviewing and challenging all the time, can we actually do things differently? Can we save costs here or there without sacrificing the quality of what we're doing, the quality of what we're producing, or the service we're offering others and output in so doing? So actually looking very carefully, painstakingly at cost structures will be a key response going forward to these changes. In amongst that cost structure will be the cost of borrowing. And for some, high borrowings at the moment will equal high risk and potentially high cost. And therefore a response, as the other areas of economics change, will be to consider de-risking or reducing the amount of borrowed money within the business. Is restructuring an option? Should it be a priority? There's absolutely nothing wrong with the right targeted funding for reinvestment, and indeed that may well be a vital factor in allowing you to improve efficiency, create a new enterprise and fund that going forward, or even to grow something that's already working on your farm. So to target borrowing and to tailor that and balance it to the output that you can genuinely sustain on the farm will be crucial in the years ahead. And we're nearly there, you'll be pleased to know, ladies and gentlemen. So number eight on my eight-point plan, our eight-point plan, is the plan itself. We need to make sure we can build realistic plans that work in a post-BPS environment, using the transition period to reduce risk, manage costs, and very importantly, play to your strengths. You know, do things that you're good at, make sure you focus on all of the resources at your disposal, and consider everything. You know, actually pool ideas from the family, from the farming family, look at other ideas that you could bring to bear, and make this time of change an opportunity. There will be challenges, some of them very big ones, and there'll be tough decisions, I'm sure, to take. And the crucial ally to success will be a positive mindset, driving that change yourself and making the whole process an opportunity.
A key part of our webinars was taking questions from the audience. Some themes, such as the impact of BPS reductions on land values, cropped up again and again, while others, as you'll hear, took us by surprise. Thank you to everyone who submitted questions. We have picked some of our favourites to share with you today.
What impact do you think the Agricultural Act will have on rent and land prices?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. We did actually ask the question in the survey that we did this summer about whether people felt that the current level of rents was sustainable. It's quite interesting to know that only 9% said yes. Granted, I would say the majority of the people we asked were renting land in rather than renting land out, so it's probably more of a tenant's view rather than a landlord view, but it did tell us something. I think the way to look at it really is you've got to look at FBTs in one bracket and AHAs in another. The FBTs, because of the rent review mechanics, is based on market rent, so basically the market decides, and generally it just comes down to supply and demand. And what we've seen in the last few years is a huge demand for both equipped farms and bare land lettings, but just a really small supply. So when farms have come to the market, that's what's driven the rents to where we see them today. And there was a point in time where I thought the supply of both quick farms and bare land might increase a bit with people taking this opportunity to come out of farming. But what we've seen lately is estates taking a slightly different view when farms come back in hand, and they're looking at different contract arrangements, share farming, contract farming, farming more land in hand. And all that's done is tighten up the supply even further. So I think, from my opinion, I don't think the FBT rents will change a huge amount in the short term. AHA is possibly slightly different. They're based on the productivity and the earning capacity of the farm. And if there's a full AHA rent and the BPS does come under pressure in the next few years, there could be also downward pressure on the farm rents. But I think the thing to say is it's farm by farm. It depends what the passing rent is now, and you've got to look at each farm in its individual circumstance. Farm team might have a slightly different approach.
Yeah, there's always two sides to every discussion, isn't there? I probably agree with John. We don't necessarily see significant reductions in rents straight away. I suppose ultimately market forces will dictate what happens to rents. And I think John is absolutely right about supply and demand and those kind of things. And supply could well be a little bit tighter with a switch to different land use and those kind of things. Having said that, we get involved in quite a lot of rent tenders on behalf of prospective tenants. And I think we would always suggest that the better rents to put forward are those that are sustainable and for the longer term, both in the interest of the tenant and the landlord ultimately as well, perhaps, or whether it's a tenancy or other kind of arrangement. So with some pressure on income, with the loss of basic payment, that will inevitably need to be factored into the calculations for rents going forward. So it's perhaps a counter view, and as we said, there's potentially two sides to each argument.
What we'll also find is John did touch on it in terms of the other arrangements, but I think actually we could find that rents or renting land might become a lot less of an option going forward. I think there could well be an awful lot of alternative arrangements going forward, especially where with the fact that it's likely that there's going to be parts of the farm that you're going to be wanting to farm profitably, productively. And other parts of the farm where you're actually going to be putting into elms and trying to secure payments under that scheme. So it's highly likely that the types of arrangements that you might well be entering into might well be might well lend itself more to the likes of the contract farming agreements, the share farming agreements, where the occupiers or the owners of the land might well say, right, well, we'll manage the elms element, but we'll actually get someone else in who is very good at farming to farm the productive bits and actually maximise the income from that way. So don't be surprised if things change in terms of the types of arrangements that are going to be out there going forward.
How do you see the change in support affecting the bank's appetite to lend to agriculture?
I think good businesses will always secure finance where they need it, whether that's for the ongoing working capital for a business or whether it's for new projects. And I guess how are the good businesses measured? They're measured by the performance financially, historically. They're measured by the capital position of the business and perhaps how well people understand their current business performance and their future potential performance under any new opportunities. So I think where farmers are looking to invest, to develop the business, to expand, if they go to the bank manager with a well thought through plan and well costed, I think they'll get a good hearing from banks generally who will potentially be keen to lend money to farmers for the future. Perhaps on the other side of the fence, where businesses are struggling a little bit and maybe don't have a really good handle on the costs of the business, need a little bit more working capital each year, perhaps for a number of years. With the loss of the basic payment, I think one or two bank managers are already asking the question out there, where's the business going and what are the plans for the future to absorb the reductions in income that's going to be lost from the basic payment?
I'd absolutely agree, Guy, with that. I think, Greg, you've used two of the same phrases I would have used, well thought through and well costed. It's always been a strong and, dare I say, preferred sector to lend to for fairly obvious reasons. And I think provided businesses are well prepared and are putting forward good plans, you know, it will be an attractive sector to lend to going forward, no question about it.
You've talked about benchmarking and improving the business performance to be in the top percentage of businesses in the sector. If we've already done this, what further actions would you recommend?
For those businesses that are performing really, really well, finding those improvements is always much, much harder to get the additional bit benefit that's required. But perhaps for really good performing businesses, that's the time to consider the really radical options where perhaps they might enter into, James touched on joint ventures, and some farmers have gone down the route of syndicate farming where they pool all of their resources. I've got two or three, a couple of friends in the south of England, and they've been in a group for 4 or 5 years, and it's gone really well. But they're very conscious that they need to make further improvements in the cost saving measures. So they are now actively looking for two new partners to come into their group. They're already farming something like 4 or 5,000 acres, but they want to increase the scale of that to spread the cost of the machinery and equipment. So radical approach. It's worked really well for them so far, but they've identified they need to take things forward positively and develop the group.
Who do you see being the winners and the losers?
I wouldn't actually look at it from a sector point of view. I would look at it for how people react now, because I honestly believe that if people actually react now and start doing an awful lot that Jim talked about in his presentation in terms of reviewing what you've got, working out how you are, what you're prepared to do, what you're not prepared to do, are you prepared to stay in, and if you are prepared to stay in, what are you prepared to do to actually move your business forward so it is going to be viable going forward, and you are actually proactive now, I honestly think there could be an awful lot of opportunities out there for people going forward, because the other people, the people that put their heads in the sand, who don't actually react now and just think, oh, well, it's fine, I've been carrying on for the last last 25 years and I've managed to make a living and I'll carry on doing that, I think those guys will eventually suddenly find that they are completely up the creek without a paddle, and the paddle's a long way away, and they have got no alternative other than to give up or do something radical like asking someone else to farm their land. So I think those that are actually proactive and do something now and consider this, look at it, like Jim said, as an opportunity, could well be positioning themselves for a bit of a bonanza time going forward. Which I can only applaud.
I agree, Rob. I think it's the calmly embrace change and take tough decisions if you have to do so. Possibly also, I'd add, you know, if you need to seek help and advice, get a second opinion. That's also a big positive. And ultimately, make a plan that embraces the sort of things that you're talking about there. I quite agree. I think that those are the winners, and the losers potentially, are ignoring what we're seeing in front of us and hoping it'll all go away.
Do you think the removal of the BPS direct payments will be beneficial to UK agriculture?
I think it will, because it will encourage a greater pace of change towards a time when we're farming and producing products for the right reasons, that they're profitable, that we're good at producing them, or the individual businesses are well suited to producing them at the right cost-effective price. In the long term, I would say very definitely yes, but that doesn't take away the shorter-term challenges that inevitably will be felt by individual businesses.
My only comment on top of that really is the fact that if you actually probably ask everyone that's listening today or watching today, the thing that gets them out of the bed in the morning is actually the farming activities in your business, rather than worrying about the paperwork or doing the VPS forms with them. That's maybe, you know, more often than not, we're doing the VPS forms for them. It's not, the priority is, you know, managing the crops, managing the livestock, enjoying that side of things. And the actual direction of travel now potentially is going to give the farming community a big boost to actually enable us to do that, and that be profitable in its own right. And that to me is something that I'm much more comfortable with in managing, being able to control something that I can actually influence the profitability rather than relying on handouts. So I also think that it's actually will be very positive for the UK. Yeah, it's going to be some pain in the next couple of 2 or 3 years and things like that. But if you can go through that pain, I think there's going to be some very positive opportunities going forward.
If you won £2 million on the lottery, would you invest it in a farm? It's a very good question. James, can I come to you first?
Sure. Guy, thank you for that. I think like any good referee, I need a bit of thinking time before I answer that one. Yes, I probably would. I would actually, from a personal point of view, because if it's well planned and well thought through, and provided it's a farm that I could see a genuine opportunity to develop in the ways that we've been discussing, I absolutely would. I give that as a personal point of view, because it's always something, you know, had I gone in a different direction, I'd like to have done. So yeah, I think I would. Anybody like to give a different view?
I would as well, but I would probably select what type of farm I'd be buying, and I'd probably be either something that's extremely productive or at the other end of the scheme is extremely got an opportunity to have significant environmental income streams. So at either end of the spectrum, I would struggle to be the bit in the middle is something that probably is not going to give the value of return that either end would.
I think if I won £2 million in the lottery, I think I'd sit back and just watch what happens for 12 months. Good.
From a yacht.
That'd be nice.
Each to their own.
That's all from our panel of experts. You've been listening to James Seven, Greg Ricketts, Robert Sullivan, Guy Cograve, John Wallace, and Holly Story. The Changing Landscape programme will continue in January, when we'll be taking an in-depth look at diversification in its many forms. Follow us on social media to keep track of the campaign, or sign up to receive content via email by sending your name and address to changinglandscape@gscgrays.co.uk. Thank you for listening.